And welcome once again to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, California. We're broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus. We're also on the web at KUCI.org. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. Writers on Writing features authors, poets, literary agents, and editors discussing the art and business of writing. And before we bring on our first guest, Alexandra Penny, author of Magic Words, co-author of Magic Words, I want to tell you to stay tuned through the second half of the show as well, because we're going to bring on Donna Albrecht, who is going to tell us about the American Society of Journalists and Authors conference that will be taking place next weekend in New York. And we'll have other things to say as well about writing. So there we go. So come back after the break. In any case, my first guest is Alexandra Penny. She's co-author of Magic Words, 101 Ways to Talk Your Way Through Life's Challenges, published by Broadway Books. Her co-author, Howard Kaminsky, was to be with us as well, but he will not be able to make it. So fortunately, we have Alexandra. In addition to being the author of 4 best-selling books, she has served as editor-in-chief of Self magazine and has written lifestyle columns for the New York Times magazine, as well as many other publications. And she's also formerly an editor at Bantam Books. Welcome, Alexandra.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi, great to have you.
It's great to be with you.
Tell us about Magic Words, 101 Ways to Talk Your Way Through Life's Challenges. How did this book come about?
Came about, Howard Kaminsky and I have been friends for 20 years. And one time, as most writers will recognize this situation, I was really in a funk. And I couldn't seem to, it wasn't writer's block, it was everything block. Couldn't seem to get out of it. And we were having a drink, and Howard said to me, when you're in a downward spiral, hit the ground running. So I called him the next day and said, Howie, you know, I haven't forgotten that. And I'm kind of spurred into action with that. Those were really magic words for me. And the minute I said it, I knew that we had always had these sort of magical phrases that worked for each other,
mm-hmm.
and that we should start collecting them. So we've been collecting them for 15 years, 20 years. And we decided to put them in the book. In a book, they're just different words and phrases that are kind of like showstoppers.
Mm-hmm.
One is that I always recall is time is honey. Another one is I've decided not to decide. So we put 101 of them into a little book, and they work in all different kinds of contexts. And showstoppers. They work for family. They work in your love life. They work on the job. They work for your health. So that's really what Magic Words is.
And it seems to me, you know, there are situations, as the subtitle says, 101 Ways to Talk Your Way Through Life's Challenges. There are situations you get into that you don't quite know how to get out of. And it does seem that when you have the right words, you can diffuse situations. You can find your way out.
Absolutely. Let's just take one when somebody's asking you really a very nosy question, something you don't want to really answer. One of the best comebacks. For instance, somebody said to you, "How much do you make?"
instead of saying, "None of your business,"
you might want to say, "Why are you asking?"
Uh huh.
And that just stops. It also gives you a chance to breathe and to figure out what's going on in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Another one would be, oh gosh, there's 101 of them. This is a pewter opportunity. That's one I like a lot. We always have golden opportunities in mind, you know, something, the golden opportunity will come along. And as a friend once told me, I was looking at something, and I said, well, I'm not going to do this and this and this and this. I'm beginning to sound like a spoiled brat, Barbara, I know, but I'm not really. And the person said to me, look, this is really a pewter opportunity. It's not gold. But boy, it's really a pewter opportunity. And I thought, how many times do we look for something and not see that something else may have great value?
Yeah.
So these kinds of words help you in that one. Another one is, are you actually yelling at me? Many of us have had really, you know, screamers for bosses.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that helped, we got magic words through other people, you know, through our friends as well as our own. And one of this was told to us, your listeners will be interested in this, by a top publishing executive, a name brand publishing executive, who had a CEO of the company who always screamed. And finally, he said to him one day, are you actually yelling at me? And the guy just stopped. Now, what if you had a boss that said, yes, I am? The next thing to do is to say, well, maybe you want to think about it. I'm going out to read a magazine. You know, there's ways to deal with all this, but we don't remember them.
Right.
So this book kind of spurs you on and gives you, you know, a few that you can remember, and sometimes you might want to consult it and see, you know, if there's others that you can use.
And some of these are quite cute and funny. Let's quit while we're behind.
Yeah, that is, it's a great one for a couple. You know, you want to stay together, you argue over something, and you know the argument's not going to go anywhere, and you just, one of the best ways to stop an argument is, come on, honey, let's quit while we're behind.
Mm-hmm. One that's kind of dangerous for me is in the chapter right before it, I've decided not to decide, since I have a problem making decisions, it seems.
That's what it's for. It's for people like you and me. Ambivalence is the core of what we're talking about. What does ambivalence mean? It means you can hold two thoughts in your head at the same time. I want to go to Florida, but I don't want to go to Florida.
Right.
Okay? How do you make up your mind whether to go to Florida or not? To buy yourself time, you say to yourself, I'm making a decision. I'm deciding not to decide about this now. So you put it off, but you have made a decision, so you can't flagellate yourself for saying I'm indecisive, I'm no good, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Writers on Writing, and my guest is Alexandra Penny, co-author of Magic Words, 101 Ways to Talk Your Way Through Life's Challenges, published by Broadway Books. I'm curious about the collaborating process that you and Howard Kaminsky underwent in this book. I notice that if say, in a chapter, which, and they're all in very short bite-sized chapters, which I really like, because I think, you know, for those of us who don't have a ton of time to read, it's nice to be able to pick up a book and read a couple of chapters before, instead of reading, you know, a few pages and you're maybe a tenth of the way into a chapter.
Uh-huh.
But in any case, I'm wondering how you collaborated, because one thing I was curious about, if we're talking about something you've gone through, I might say when Alexandra did such and such, or something Howard went through when Howard did such and such. Do you do that with this sort of book because it's in both of your voices, and you obviously can't say when I?
Yeah, this is every writer faces the problem of voice. Now, when you have two writers together and you have two voices, Howard's a very, very funny guy. He's actually Mel Brooks's cousin. I'm much more of a serious kind of writer. He's just a wonderful writer. I've never written with anybody before. I'm a lone ranger writer, just by myself. Howard has collaborated with his wife on books. Okay, how did we do it? And it was a dream collaboration, and I think for two reasons. One, because it was nonfiction. It was easier to do nonfiction. And two, because the nature of this book, it is broken down to 101 chapters, in other words, 101 magic words. How we actually did it was we each said we would do 50 magic words. How did we get the voice? He read mine, added his style to it. I read his, added my style to it. It came out, and this, after revision over revision, I mean, we rewrote and rewrote to get this one voice. Because we edited and rewrote each other, Now, Howard has told me that's how he works on fiction with his wife, Susan. He'll do one chapter, she'll do the next chapter. Then they read each other's chapters and they edit. So it is possible to do it in fiction. This was a very simple way of doing a book. Let's each do 50 and let's edit each other. You have to have enormous respect for the other person and what they have to say, and you can't sort of pussyfoot around and say, well, I think you should change this or this or this. You have to be direct. And the other person has to say, no, I don't agree with you, and then you have to talk it out.
Mm. Well, that would seem to be the most difficult part of collaborating, when you really think something needs to stay. Say you have a chapter that you just really believe needs to be in the book, and Howard says, no way, that's not going in there.
Yeah, and how do we resolve that? We discuss it, and because we had a common goal in mind, which was, first of all, two things. There's a magic word in here that's perfect for writers. Get your ego out of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, sometimes it's your ego. It was your idea. So you don't want to let that idea go. So the first advice I have to any human being who's writing a book with somebody else or any kind of collaboration is get your ego out of it.
Mm.
That's what causes the most problems.
Mm-hmm.
The second way to do that, to deal with this kind of thing, is leave everything in. Don't argue. Don't take the thing out and wait till you've completed a first draft. It's very often then, there were a couple things that Howard didn't want that I wanted in and vice versa, and we agreed to wait through the first draft and read it again, you know, put it in a drawer for 5 or 6 days and read it again, and revisit those issues. And we ended up agreeing on everything.
Mm-hmm.
We have two different ways to do it. First,
sure.
get your ego out of it and let go of some of your ideas. You know, it was, I think it was Hemingway that said, you have to let your children go.
Mm-hmm.
So if your chapter is your little baby, you got to let it go sometimes.
Mm. Well, now both of you are pretty well connected, I would say, with publishing,
yes,
in New York.
Yeah.
So was selling this book sort of different than it usually goes for nonfiction authors?
Now, you're talking about your listeners, I think, are probably writers of any age,
mm-hmm,
who may not be plugged in the way we were,
right,
to New York media. And that's the day, it's really hard. But you mentioned the ASME, I think it's the Society of Magazine Editors.
Actually, American Society of Journalists and Authors, our conference is next weekend.
As he was this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that is a very good thing to, if you can actually get to.
To make those connections?
Yeah. Now, the best way to get any book published is through an agent. And agents are the first line, you know, of defense. They will read unsolicited manuscripts. Publishing houses will not these days. I mean, I don't even know one publishing house, and this to me is tragic, that will read an unsolicited manuscript.
Mm-hmm.
But agents are always looking for people. Now, where do you find an agent? There are books listing agents, as you know, and agents can come from any part of the country. They don't have to be big deal New York agents. There are agents in Los Angeles, there are agents in San Francisco. And you know, if I lived in, let's say, Peoria, I would look up literary agents in the biggest city close to me.
Mm-hmm.
And find and call those people, because agents are sympathetic. They really want to hear from you. They need your business. Failing that, you can go to the net, look up agents, literary agents, and I would suggest going to the ones closest to home, to the regional ones first.
Hmm. And everybody often has, well, new writers often have the idea that they need a New York agent, or none will do.
No, I disagree with that. As I said, regional agents, if they have a really good property, can get to the right people. You, as the writer, have to assess the proficiency and professionalism of the agent.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, at a certain point you have to make a judgment call.
Yes.
You can also blanket New York agents with query letters, and you will get a response.
Mm-hmm.
But don't just think one or two agents. You've got to really blanket the world.
Yes. You're listening to Writers...
And don't forget, wait, one last thing.
Go ahead.
Spelling counts. I've gotten so many letters as editor of Self looking for jobs where people haven't, you know, they spell checked and they think everything's okay. Forget it. You've got to read everything you write so it's perfect.
Mm. Let me just say you're listening to Writers on Writing, and my guest is Alexandra Penny, co-author of Magic Words, 101 Ways to Talk Your Way Through Life's Challenges. Speaking of which, in terms of letters, query letters, or manuscripts with misspelled words, how much does that influence you? When you were an editor itself, how much would it influence you if a great query came in, but there were a bunch of misspellings, and maybe your name was spelled wrong?
It made me crazy, and I would not, a writer can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just a writer cannot do that. Even if a comma is out of place, you wonder.
Mm. Isn't that interesting?
It's a profession, and it's the difference between a professional and an amateur.
Yes.
Professional will not send in. Princess Howard said to me, my co-author, he said, when we send in this manuscript, it has to look and be perfect. We've got to set it in a beautiful typeface. It's got to be on good paper. He said, they're paying for this. It's got to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that.
Yes.
Now, he and I are all veterans, you know. We could get away with a few commas out of place. Well, we don't.
Hmm. Well, earlier we were talking about making contacts and going to conferences or going to places where you can meet people in publishing.
Uh-huh.
And when you were an editor itself, would you... How important was that personal contact? I mean, you know, just meeting somebody in passing at a conference and then later perhaps getting a query from them, how much did it matter to have a face to put with that query letter?
It's very interesting that you ask that, because I've been talking to some younger people about that. I and many other editors that I know, because we bought stories all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was most swayed by a brilliant or provocative or controversial query letter. I don't care what the person looks like, whether they're green, purple, yellow, 1,000 years old, or 10 years old. If a query letter or an idea is startling or interesting or, as I said, provocative, I'm paying attention. It's all in the writing. You could be the most articulate person in the world and sound as if you would write a brilliant article or book, but if you can't get it on paper, it's not what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to go meet people. I think possibly the way to look at it, Barbara, is once you've sent a query letter and somebody's responding to you, you might say, listen, I'd like to put a face to the, you know, to the letter. In other words, I'd like to, you know, become a live person, not
mm-hmm.
just a letter. So I still think the power of the pen is what it's all about, and I think any agent or editor will tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm being pragmatic now. You don't have to go visit New York.
Right.
You can just write some brilliant letters.
Hmm. What about when you're starting out? A lot of writers starting out have their eyes set on major magazines. And in my classes, I try to tell people, don't start at the top. Start not quite at the bottom either, but somewhere that's realistic, and work your way up and hone your skills and your craft to get there. But if they don't have, say, clips, for even some of perhaps the mid-range magazines, they feel like, why should they even bother, because they don't have the experience that other writers have sending stuff in.
Let me tell you, you are 100% right. The way, and again, I'm speaking for myself, but I'm also speaking for other editors, because we all talk about it. The best thing you can do to get somebody's attention is to send in an idea in a really well-wrought letter with your clips. Now, where are you going to get clips? It sounds like a catch-22, right? You've got to get them in the smaller magazines. You must. And you can have the most brilliant idea and a good query letter, and an editor will take a chance. But the fact that you have backup and clips really opens the door for you. Mm. So if you, I always told my students and the writers that work, that wanted to work, you know, for self, go to, you know, Madison, Wisconsin, write for your local penny saver, write anything to get it proofread and in print. And it gives you a gloss of professionalism, and also you're not so vulnerable to rejection slips.
Yes. Rejection slips. Oh, yes.
Well, we all get them at every stage of the game. As a matter of fact, I just got one.
You got one?
Yeah, sure. So you've got to be willing to be rejected, but be rejected for the right reason.
Mm-hmm.
That the editor doesn't like the idea, hasn't got room for it, it's been done, not for it was sloppily presented, you didn't have the right clip, you didn't, you know, light up the page.
Mm-hmm.
It's good writing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, I know that at every stage you're going to get rejected, and I think that's another thing that new writers really can't accept in a way. They take it very personally.
You can't. If I took every rejection letter I ever had personally, Howard Kaminsky and all his magic words couldn't help me. It's part of the game. It's part of the profession. And the biggest problem is every writer I know, absolutely including myself, has the thinnest skin in the world. We can't take rejection and we can't take criticism.
Yeah. At least we're not being rejected like an actor might be in an audition personally. Nah, wrong look. Nah, wrong voice.
Awful.
Get out of here.
Awful. If you do your best and you've presented. See, rejections tell you a lot. And that's why it's a good idea to be rejected by smaller newspapers and magazines. Why I agree with what you said before about what you tell your students. Because those rejections will give you a feel for what is needed and what's out there. Also, lead from strength. If you know about a subject, write about that subject.
Mm-hmm.
You really know about how to grow roses. Write about growing roses and send it to a variety of gardening magazines.
Yes.
Maybe you will end up being like Jamaica Kincaid, the wonderful writer,
mm-hmm.
Who writes about roses and now writes for The New Yorker.
Right.
You know what I mean? You mm-hmm. can write for roses, for garden design, for your local weekly newspaper. You can write about it for House and Garden, and then you can write about it for The New Yorker. You can just go right up the scale.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And in every other business, we take steps, and in writing, we just want to be there.
Yeah.
You know, you just want to be there.
I know, because writing is so hard. You know, I think that the idea, the romance people have about writing is, oh, you know, you're expressing yourself, and you have something to say. It's hard, hard work. It's lonely. It's thankless. And I forget which writer it was. It might have been some major writer who said, yeah, writing makes me happy about 5 minutes a month. I mean, I don't want to discourage people, but don't think it's going to be a happy, you know, all happiness all the time.
Yeah, if you want to be happy, there's other things you might want to
do. The roses in the garden. Don't write about them.
That's right.
I mean, it's not that it's an unhappy life. It's a life I've chosen. But it is a life where you have to make, for instance, why not write about rejection slips? You know, write about what you know.
What about magic words to use in publishing or with editors or agents? Or
okay, I'll give you one.
Okay.
One of the best ones to use is, I need your help. Not I need help, not I need advice. Now, why is magic words, as a matter of fact, an editor gave me those magic words.
Hmm.
I need your help. Why do they work magic? It involves the word you, your, involves the other person.
Mm-hmm.
People are not that cold or hard-hearted as, you know, New York agents seem or agency. People make, you know, the literary world in New York seem, you know, terribly hard-hearted. You can say, I need your help. I need to know what's wrong with this. I need to know, please help me find out how I can make a contact. It's your help I'm looking for. It's a great way to get help.
Hmm. Alexander, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
I loved it.
It was a great pleasure. Thanks so much.
Sure.
That was Alexandra Penny, co-author of Magic Words, 101 Ways to Talk Your Way Through Life's Challenges, co-authored with Howard Kaminsky and published by Broadway Books. She's a best-selling author of four other books and a former editor itself, so check it out, Magic Words. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Donna Albrecht will be with us, so please stay tuned. Don't go anywhere.
Come back, baby, please don't go. No, I love you, darling, hate to see you go. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. My heart's full of sorrow, mama aching tears. Gone 24 hours, child, seem like a thousand years. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. Let's talk it over before you go away. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time.
And welcome once again to Writers on Writing. We're at 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, California, broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and next up we have Donna Albrecht. She's the National Vice President of Conferences for the American Society of Journalists and Authors, that you can find at asja.org. I actually met Donna through the organization when I joined a couple years ago. She's the author of hundreds of magazine articles and seven books, including the newly revised and updated Buying a Home When You're Single, and I Love to Tell the Story, Favorite Bible Stories of Famous People. Hi, Donna.
Hi, Barbara.
Great to have you.
Thank you.
You know, I was noticing with these two titles that they're such different topics.
Yes, they are. I have traditionally written in the service category, which, as you know, is a way of giving people the information they want to have to make their life better. Some of my books that are still available in many places include Raising a Child Who Has a Physical Disability, which I have done, Buying a Home When You're Single, which you talked about, Promoting Your Business with Free or Almost Free Publicity, and those kinds of things. And a few years ago, I just felt drawn to try to find out what made really well-known people tick, because I read so many articles that talked about what color their fingernails were and what they'd eaten for lunch and what their latest project was.
But when you talk about highly successful people, you're normally talking about people who have overcome great odds at some point in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to find out how they did it.
Interesting. Have most of your books come from personal experience?
Some yes, some no. The buying a home when you're single, I didn't do that. but I did about 5 years as a freelance writer. I was the lead real estate writer for the Contra Costa Times back when it was privately owned. And in all of that time, I was always impressed in my interviews with how many single women could actually afford to buy a home, but were put off because they were afraid of the language and the process. They didn't understand them.
Hmm.
So when I decided to stop writing newspaper things at that time, I really wanted to put all the information I had in a book in a way that would help these women.
Yeah.
Men use the book too, and actually, it probably wouldn't surprise you too much to know that some of my people who are the most enthusiastic about getting a copy are parents whose young adult children have moved home.
Interesting.
You know, and they kind of leave buying a home when you're single out on a coffee table where they can find it.
Time to go. Well, now, what about other things you do? I mean, you've been wrapped up with planning the conference, but, you know, what are you working on? Do you have time when you're planning the conference to do long works? Is that easier than working on magazine stuff?
Well, primarily I've been working on articles for magazines in areas. Again, it's a service kind of a situation, magazines for people who are in different areas of business, in speaking, people who do employment issues, that sort of thing. And I've been working on a book proposal for a major book that I'm working on, and my agent is waiting for it because she's got a couple editors who want to see it, but I haven't quite got that far.
Well, you know, that's interesting because, you know, many beginning writers find it really hard to find the time to write because they don't have a deadline. And I too am trying to finish up this book proposal for my agent who says, where is it? And I'm like, well, it'll be there someday. And I find that, well, at one point I might have seen that as a great motivator, and it doesn't seem to be.
Well, this book that I'm working on has kind of taken on a life of its own. I wanted it to be a pretty coffee table book with a little bit of writing and lots of lovely pictures, and it wants to be a graduate level textbook. So it and I have been having some wonderful discussions and fights. That does slow down the process when you're having trouble actually getting it fully defined.
Yes. If you just tuned in, you're a little bit late, but in any case, we have some time left, and I am with Donna Albrecht, who is author of 7 books, including Buying a Home When You're Single, and I Love to Tell the Story, Favorite Bible Stories of Famous People. And she's also conference chair, national vice president of conferences for the American Society of Journalists and Authors, which she belongs to, which I belong to, which we are going to next weekend, the weekend of the, I guess, 12th to New York, to be at this conference and to enjoy it and take part in it. And so I want to talk a little bit about it and talk about ASJA just a bit for people who maybe have heard the name or, you know, wondered what ASJ is and have heard about this conference and maybe have never heard about it and are hearing about it for the first time. I have listeners in New York, actually, and on the East Coast. And I'd like to just, maybe we can chat about this and why it would be good. What's good about this conference? Why should people go?
Okay, Barbara, first, as you know, and I'm sure some of your listeners know, the American Society of Journalists and Authors is the premier professional society for nonfiction writers in this country, and we have members around the world. We are all professional-level nonfiction writers, which makes the networking and the information sharing and everything about being a member extraordinary in terms of the kind of help and assistance and support you can look for from fellow members. We also are leaders in the fights for writers' rights, and that's a very important thing in this day and age. Our conference on Saturday, April 13th, will be held at the Grand Hyatt in New York City, which is right next to Grand Central Terminal, and it is just an extraordinary day by all accounts. And I'm not just saying that because I am in charge of planning it. I'm saying it because my committee has done a phenomenal job. We have 25 panels and workshops, and we have two keynoters. Now, to open up the day, because of everything that's gone on in New York that's made life so difficult for people there, people who care about people there, and all the rest of us too, we're starting with a new opening session, and I have author Lori Beth Jones coming. She's a best-selling author in the business area, and she's going to talk about becoming the professional writer you were born to be. She specializes in helping people integrate their careers with their spirituality, and I'm thinking that this will help give people a really up, get-going start on the day.
Mm-hmm.
At lunch, we have Nina Bernstein, who is a National Book Award finalist this year for her book, The Lost Children of Wilder, The Epic Struggle for Change in Foster Care. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal book. And she's been up for a number of other awards, and we're really looking forward to her luncheon speech.
Mm-hmm.
Now, each of the five periods, we have five different panels, and each or workshops. The panels each have four people on them who are specialists in the area. As professional writers, marketing is a topic that's always at the top of our heads one way or another. And so a lot of our workshops focus on the marketing aspects, how to make money, how to make more money. Actually, I believe you are the moderator for the panel on how to earn a six-figure income.
Yeah, really. Which I can't wait to hear what they have to say.
But, one of the ones that's competing with you will possibly be very attractive to a lot of people who have been editors of magazines that have recently folded, and we know there have been way too many of those. We have a panel on switching from staff to freelance, to help those editors get into the freelance lifestyle and become productive, and of earning a living at it kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
For people who think they'd like to self-publish, we have a self-publishing panel. We have panels on medical writing, how to do biographies, which is a very popular topic lately.
And screenwriting.
This is the first time we've done a screenwriting panel. And Sarah Godwin, the moderator, has put together Bill Contardi from the William Morris Agency, who specializes in selling dramatic rights from books and articles. We have Chip Duncan from the Duncan Group, an independent film producer. Kevin McCary, who's a supervising producer with National Geographic's Natural History Unit.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim Schock, a screenwriter novelist who's written for feature films and television shows like Murphy Brown and Moonlighting.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're thinking about screenwriting, this would be a good place to just get your feet wet a little bit and learn a little about where you could go with it.
Mm-hmm. And then on Sunday, there are more intensive, longer workshops.
Yes, and some people think these are primarily for the novice writers, but actually, a lot of times when you've specialized in one area of writing, you may not be as familiar with another as you would like to be, and you're thinking of maybe moving over to something. We have one on how to write book proposals that sells itself. Michael Larson is going to be doing that three-hour workshop, and he's the author of How to Write a Book Proposal, which has been a bestseller for years and years, and I actually used it to sell my first book.
Mm-hmm. It's a great book.
It's a great book. We have a workshop on writing essays and op-ed pieces, which is something that a lot of people enjoy doing. Writing successful article queries by Elisa Collier-Kuhl, a member who wrote the book on how to write irresistible query letters, will be leading that.
I've talked about that book so much. Before I met Lisa, when I was teaching, I recommended that, and I still am teaching, and I still recommend it. But I wish I had. If they sold stock in books,
uh-huh.
I should have taken stock out. I've sold that book for her so many times. What a great book!
Well, Sunday we also have a workshop on memoir and autobiography writing, which is just a wonderful thing, especially a lot of people now have older relatives, or even they may be at an age where maybe they're part of the World War II generation, and they have stories to tell that they haven't gotten around to telling.
Mm-hmm.
And memoirs and autobiographies can be a wonderful way of preserving those memories for future generations.
Yes. You're listening to Writers on Writing, and my guest is Donna Albrecht, who is the National Vice President of Conferences for the American Society of Journalists and Authors, and also author of many books, including Buying a Home When You're Single. Anyway, there was something else. I'm looking at this brochure of the conference, and I'm struck with, as well as your work and the committee's work, which is volunteer, all of these panels that are moderated by members, and these workshops on Sunday, which take quite a bit of time to not only do but to prepare for. And I think I'm just struck with how much volunteering goes on in this organization. And I don't know. It just it's a wonderful thing.
Well, it is a wonderful thing. There's just something about professional writers. There's a great deal of camaraderie and willingness to step in and help one another. And this organizing this conference has just been a joy because it's given me a chance to talk to so many wonderful people. And we have people who are moderating these panels, each of whom is pretty much a recognized expert in their own right in this topic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been, you know, very great for helping them to organize who should be there.
Yeah. And the mentoring sessions.
The mentoring sessions are something that we started a few years ago, and it's a marvelous opportunity for people who would like to get just a little bit of personal attention and advice on how to take what they're working on right now to the next step. We will have, if they have signed up, I'm afraid it may be too late to sign up for this year, but certainly people could keep it in mind for next year. But they will get, they sign up and they say what it is they're looking for, maybe advice on their book proposal, maybe help with directing article ideas, maybe it's just help in getting a better lead going in an article topic they're working on, whatever their writing project is.
Mm-hmm.
They will be assigned an ASJA member who is familiar and works in that area, and they'll have a half an hour of FaceTime to talk about what they're trying to do and get feedback, which is an incredibly valuable service.
Yeah. How many people are we expecting? Do we know yet?
We are doing very, very well. We're not completely sold out yet, and actually if you're people in New York area, or even in L.A. if they're thinking of flying out, are interested, they really should get on the website and sign up in the next 24 hours because there is a possibility we may have to close registration for the first time ever.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Well, I think
with what happened in New York with 9/11, everyone, you know, a lot of us thought, oh, no, what's going to happen?
I know. Right after that happened, actually that happened when we were just starting to get our panels together.
Yeah.
And it was very scary because some of the people who had agreed to be on panels pulled out. Some people were saying, you know, you really can't do this. We need to not do it. But we chose to feel that we had something to offer, and there was no way in September we could know what was going to be happening next April. And so we decided to forge ahead. And I think part of it is that we are certainly hitting a chord for people who are looking deeper into their lives, and they want to really make use of their creative energies. And so writing is a great way to use your creative energies in a productive way, and selling that writing is a good way to make it pay at the grocery store.
Yeah.
And also, you know, because we had the committee create the conference that they always wanted to go to,
mm-hmm.
we've got a lot of exciting new topics that people haven't seen before, like the ones you've talked about and some others. And it's just a great thing for professionals and people who are aspiring to become professionals to come and get all this new information.
Yeah. You can go to the website, asja.org, and read all about the conference, read about last year's conference, and anything you ever wanted to know, you can find there. And hotels back there, I mean, a lot of us have gotten hotel rooms at the Hyatt through Priceline, and I can't talk about cost or anything like that on this show, but through Priceline.com, you can just get wonderful, wonderful rates, that are just quite extraordinary, that you're losing out if you don't go, almost, you know, I mean, it's just, I don't know.
Well, the thing is, if they don't go, they'll never know what connections they would have made, what editors they might have met, which agents they could have become friends with, what colleagues they could have, you know, developed new projects with because they weren't there.
Now, you've gone to the conference before you were conference chair.
Yes.
And what sort of things have happened there for you in other years?
Oh, I've gotten work through meeting editors there.
Mm-hmm.
I have developed strong professional relationships with other writers, and that has first of all, it's great support when a project's going bad and you need somebody to support you, or if you're looking for a particular resource and you know a lot of members, you know that most of them, you can pick up a phone and say, look, I know you worked on this kind of a project before. Where would you go with this? Who would you talk to? And people do share.
Yeah.
You know, and that's wonderful. And it's a great time. Writing can be lonely.
Yeah, it sure can.
And you go and you spend a few days talking to other writers and all about writing, and it's very invigorating.
Can we give out your particular email address in case anyone wants to contact you?
That would be great.
Directly? Albrecht@compuserve.com. That's Albrecht at compuserve.com. Or go to the website, asja.org, and read all about the conference. Anything else, Donna, that you want to make sure people know about in regards to what's going to be going on?
Well, I think that, first of all, I would like them to look at the whole ASJA site and discover more of the benefits of membership. Most of the, there are chapters throughout the country, and I know there's one in L.A., and there's one up here in San mm-hmm. Francisco, and New York has regular meetings, and quite often, at least on the chapters, we will help mentor people in who may not be quite ready for membership yet because the membership requirements are quite stringent.
Yes.
So I would like people to look at the benefits and give a thought to maybe this is something that would help them to take their professional career up a notch.
Yes.
I would also like them to keep an eye out there at UC Irvine for our wonderful upcoming event in October.
That's right.
You want to tell them a little bit about that?
Yeah,
moment?
Yeah. You know, I totally forgot about it. I'm so wrapped up in the New York conference, but October 5th, here at UCI, ASJA, the Southern California chapter, is co-sponsoring a writers' conference with UCI Extension, and it's going to be a full day, not quite as complex as the New York conference, but a full day of panels, four sets of three panels, so 12 panels total. Our keynote will be Joseph Wamba, who is a Edgar Allan Poe Award-winning mystery author, and also he won a prize, and I can't recall it, for his investigative journalism. He was a journalist before he was a fiction writer, and he will be our lunchtime keynote. There will be mentoring here as well, and it's more and more info is coming out. We're going to be bringing a brochure.
I think that people who can't get to New York really ought to put October 5th on their calendar.
Yeah.
And they might want to keep an eye out on the ASJA site. I'm sure there'll be more information there soon.
Definitely, and yeah, we're going to have agents here, and we have editors and writers from major magazines that are going to be here as well. And I think it'll be great fun. Like you said, I don't want to say if nothing else, because a ton always happens in terms of contacts at conferences like this, but writing is so lonely, and you make friends. You make friends at these places, and you may come out with a writer's group or something going on. I mean, unless you're just the most quiet, introverted person in the world, something's going to happen.
Well, even the quiet person's going to learn something that
right.
might help them.
Exactly. Donna, thank you so much for taking the time. This was last minute on my part, and I apologize, but I'm glad you could come on.
Barbara, I'm delighted I was available to talk this afternoon. I enjoyed our conversation, and I really hope that your listeners will check out asja.org and learn more about the organization and both conferences.
Yes. Thank you, and I'll see you next week.
Looking forward to it.
Okay.
Okay.
See
ya.
That was Donna Albrecht. She is conference chair, and she's also author of 7 books, including How to Buy... Sorry, why do I want to say how? It's not how. It's Buying a Home When You're Single. And you can always email her at Albrecht, A-L-B-R-E-C-H-T, at CompuServe.com. We have just a couple of minutes left, and what can I tell you? I can tell you that next week, next Thursday, I'll be in New York, but I'm going to call in for the beginning of the show and talk about what's going on. It'll be sort of pre-conference stuff, and I'll be in Manhattan. And And then we will be playing, or actually my people, my wonderful PA hosts that are here, Deborah Keith, who has the show just before mine, Trend Talk, and Pablo Serrano, who has the show, The Serrano Report, on Tuesdays, I believe, will run a pre-recorded show with Michael Chabon, who was on a couple of months ago. He's Pulitzer Prize-winning author of The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. We have just a couple of minutes left. I think I want to sign off here and first tell you to email me if you have any questions at all. Email me at writersonwriting@earthlink.net or go to my website, writersonwriting.com. You can sign up to be on the mailing list and receive messages every week of who's coming on. And I'd also like to end with a quote by Faye Weldon, who said, "One can learn, at least. One can go on learning until the day one is cut off." Faye is a funny writer. She's very dry, very British. You've been listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and thank you for listening. Please stay safe.